Tom Woods Show, episode 1812.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. We're talking today about business in 2021, particularly in the wake of what happened in 2020. Really, none of us, even the most cynical, expected the kinds of restrictions and regulations and shutdowns and curtailments that we saw in 2020. And even when things open up to more or less the way they were before in terms of business, there are certain behavioral changes people have made that are likely to be permanent in some cases. So how do we take that into account if we want to prosper in the future? And frankly, what are the kinds of businesses we can operate that aren't subject to the whims of a Dr. Fauci? Well, joining me to discuss this are two people who've been doing exactly that for many years, namely serial entrepreneurs Aidan Booth and Steve Clayton. Aidan is actually joining us all the way from New Zealand, where things are a little bit more normal, let's say, than they are in much of the world. But poor Steve is stuck in Chicago, where things are, to say the least, rather abnormal. Well, I'm glad to have you guys with me. Steve, it's been, let's just say 2020 has not been quite the year 2019 was, because we had that great lunch. I've visited you in Chicago, and then you said we should go on this architecture tour on the water of Chicago. And I thought, oh, yeah, all right, I guess that sounds like something we would do. Boy, I am never going to even consider ignoring your advice, because that architecture tour was awesome. We had such a great time on that thing. And now 2020, I have to say, Steve, I didn't even consider coming to Chicago the whole year. So it's been rough.
No, I know. It's been a really, I feel so badly for my poor city. It's hurting like everyone else is, but you know, it feels really bad when, you know, you can't even get out on the boat and go to the architecture tour.
Yeah. And then Aidan, you actually recently, are you in New Zealand as you're talking to, where are you right now?
Yeah, I'm still in New Zealand here, Tom. We came out a few months ago, and obviously it's a little bit of a different situation over here, so we're quite fortunate in that regard. But it was an interesting year in Buenos Aires, Argentina, you know, where I am most of the time, that's for sure. Not a classic year.
Did you have to quarantine when you went to New Zealand?
Yeah, 2 weeks in a hotel room with a four-year-old and a two-year-old. That was an experience I will never forget.
Oh, so did they deliver food to you? How did it work?
Yeah, they delivered food to you, three meals a day. Actually, that was the best part of the whole experience.
Well, it would break up the day. Something to do.
But it would that's true. It would break up the day, feed the little monsters. And the food was actually amazing. So we were pretty lucky there. But it was definitely not something I'd want to repeat in a hurry.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, anyway, look, we're all safe and sound, and that's what matters. Yeah. So let's talk about 2021. Now, some people think New Year's resolutions are just a lot of bunk and nobody ever follows through on any of them. And that is true. I think we're saying something about ourselves when we reflect on the efficacy of New Year's resolutions. But there have been some that I've stayed pretty faithful to. But I think going into 2021, after the experiences and trauma of 2020, I do think there are some people who are going to start making some changes, because I think they've seen how fragile things are, you know, in terms of their business life, a lot of aspects of their lives. They did not realize the fragility of it, and how quickly it could be taken away, how quickly they could burn through their savings. It was a really, really tough wake-up call for a lot of people. And in 2020, not only did we see that, but we saw some what we might call behavioral changes, like the way people shop and buy things that, they're going to change back to some degree as the world returns to normal, but not entirely. There are some habits that are going to die hard. I bet a lot of people, for example, have grown accustomed to cooking their own meals much more than they did before, and they like the savings. And so, so some things that are not going to change. So as we think about what we want to do in 2021, it might not be a bad idea to keep in mind these new features of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree. I've never seen anything, I've been looking at these behavior patterns and things as any business person would for decades. And I've never seen a period of time where things change so quickly and fundamentally, So, I mean, when you're talking about, obviously e-commerce has been, people buying stuff online has been growing every year, and it's been great growth. And that's, and that was wonderful for our businesses. But in 2020, it just freaking exploded. You had you know, what should have been probably 10 years of growth happen in 1 year. You know, and as you pointed out, these behavior changes, people that previously they wouldn't have thought about buying things online necessarily, you know, it's just easier to go here, go there. You know, they just were like, okay, this is it. This is the new normal now. And so, you know, we're just going to keep doing this. And I think people, you know, most of them will not go back, you know, because it's just, they've seen how easy and convenient it is, you know. I think the other thing is that just security, you know, like if you think about, well, who fared the best and who fared the worst? And obviously it's still going on, you know, this pain and suffering or some people are doing great. And, you know, it's no surprise why people that had, you know, an online presence versus brick and mortar would fare much better, you know? So anyway, yeah, it's been an incredible amount of change, fundamental change in a short period of time. It's been insane.
Now, Aidan, I know you want to jump in, but just one sec before I forget, because I have a middle-aged brain, and if I don't say something right away, it never comes back. So I have to talk right now. Thinking about my own experience, of course, I'm a little bit different because most people don't make a living through a podcast. But the point is, I don't have an office. I don't have a job I can be fired from. I don't have anything in my professional life that can, practically speaking, be restricted. So I've been able to continue on as before. One thing I noticed at the beginning was not as many people were commuting because they were all staying home. And if they don't commute, they don't listen to podcasts. Yeah. So I didn't like that one bit. But for the most part, I actually did, and I spent a good chunk of the year with friends I knew who were suffering and finding ways to help them. Right. And I was in a position to help them because I had the good fortune of not having been vulnerable to what none of us could have predicted would happen. I'm sorry, Aidan, I know I interrupted you.
No, I was just going to, I hear totally what you're saying there. And it's lucky to be in that situation where you can sort of, you know, take a step back and actually help people that are really suffering. I was going to mention just about buying behaviors. I'm seeing my mum buying stuff online all the time. And it didn't used to be that thing. It could be just the silliest little knickknack or, you know, a toy for her grandchildren or something. And then from personal experience, I was just speaking to my wife yesterday and we were saying how, you know, where is all our time going? And, you know, when we are living in Argentina, we're buying all of our groceries online, all of our food and getting it delivered off to our door. That's what one of the silver linings, I guess, of 2020 for us was this door-to-door delivery and the time that it actually saves. Now, being here in New Zealand, I'm, you know, 20 minutes away from the nearest supermarket, I can't actually get delivery. But buying behaviors, I think they're changing for everyone, at least a little bit.
Well, as I kind of hinted before, I don't really deal in physical products. The only physical products I deal in are the books I publish. And there I order a bunch of them from the publisher at a discount and I sell them. And that's it. Other than that, everything I do is digital. Courses, podcast episodes, homeschool curriculum, stuff like that. It's all digital. And one advantage that that's given me is that in 2020, I didn't have to sit here worrying about supply chains from China being disrupted because there are no supply chains for me. It's all digital. It's all instantly. I can transmit it to people instantly. I can reproduce it infinitely. I don't need to deal with suppliers. But you guys are kind of the kings of physical product e-commerce. And it seems like 2020 would have had to be a year full of headaches for that model. So, and yet at the same time, knowing you guys, I'm sure there's some quick answer to this, but I frankly don't know what it is.
I'll take it first, Aidan, and then you can chime in if you want. I don't know if there's a quick answer. I mean, for sure, let me just acknowledge that it absolutely became a problem. There's no doubt about that. Early on, you know, when all of your goods come from, well, not all, but, you know, when the majority of the world's goods come from China and China shuts down, it's kind of inevitable that there's going to be supply chain issues. But I think in many ways, this was sort of a good wake-up call, you know, for a lot of people, for the world, really. And the wake-up call said, look, we better diversify. You know, we better move away from China and lots of other countries, you know, like India, Vietnam, even here in the US, amazingly enough, we might start making stuff, you know, again, sort of, you know, answered that rallying call. And, you know, there's been a lot more capacity built in different countries. I think that the supply chain itself matured a lot as a result of the pain and suffering of this, you know. And I know for what we did is we said, all right, we're going to take a step back and say, with the suppliers that we work with, we're going to go and look for lower quantity of them, but sort of higher quality. And one of the ways we're going to measure that quality is basically, you know, their supply chain. You know, how much stock do they have here? Let's make sure they're in the US if they're, you know, sending out goods to US customers and that sort of thing. And also let's make sure they have a very, very robust EDI, you know, an electronic interface, so that we've got incredible transparency into what their stock levels are, the fulfillment process, and just be able to, you know, answer issues, you know, more real time. So I think, I guess in summary, it absolutely was a problem. I think that the supply chain matured quite a bit. And I think we are, as a result of that problem, in about 100 times better place than we've ever been with the supply chain to be able to absorb another sort of hit like that.
Huh. Okay. Aidan, do you have something to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think just expanding on what Steve said, I feel like we were in the world of e-commerce and selling physical products really thrown in the deep end. So there were, you know, growing pains associated with that. But now we're in a place where there have been so many advances in technology, even little things like being able to get, going back to the example I gave a moment ago, being able to get things easily delivered to your door. This was something we could do previously, but the technology has grown a lot. And then the actual technology of how, you know, a website can interact with supply chain and sort of automatically, you know, fulfill products and things like that. I think there have been a lot of technological advances over the past 12 months or so as a result of this. And I'm really, really excited about and optimistic about where we're at with everything now. And I think, you know, we're going to come out of this for the better.
And just one more thing I would add to that also is that I would say that largely by around, I don't know, by around September, October, pretty much all the supply chain issues were pretty much resolved. You know, I mean, China opened up again and, you know, everybody was gearing up for the holiday season and things like that. So I would say it's also not that big of a problem right now, too.
All right. Fair enough. Now, incidentally, I'll say that I think probably as a general rule, it's harder to crack into what I do with digital products. Because for me, at least, the way I do it is I have built an audience, and that is the hard part. I built an audience, and then the audience likes what I produce on a daily basis, and so they're inclined to buy things that I sell. And I think these are things that are hard to cold sell.
Yes.
Like a lot of the things, products you guys deal in, you could cold sell these to people who are just generically interested in that kind of product. Whereas my courses on history are only going to be of interest to people who know who Tom Woods is.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get to a point where you're well, not only are you selling something, but you're well known. So if I were starting again and I said, I want to create an online business, maybe my first instinct would not be, not that it's impossible,
right,
but it's just not the fastest way. It would not be, let me build up an audience so that people know who Tom Woods is. I would probably want to sell things where they don't have to know who I am. I don't know who anybody is I buy from, really, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you're right. But I think it's two things. I think it's what you pointed out, the audience. But the other thing is you have to have some intellectual property that is of value. And, you know, I mean, it's not to say that not everybody's not smart. That's not the issue. It's just you have to be able to craft intellectual property like your courses, you know, your opinion pieces, you know, things like that. That is intellectual property that you develop like a product. And that is much, much harder to do.
Oh, yeah.
For most people.
You know what, Tom, just talking about this physical product, you know what the very first physical product online that I actually sold was? It was SD cards for memory cards for cameras.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's just an example of how simple this can sort of be. And there's just a never-ending supply of these weird and wonderful products out there that anyone without any kind of experience can easily sell, because you don't even have to have knowledge really about the product you're selling.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how most things in the world work. I don't know how my car works. I always joke about, as far as I know, there's an angel under the hood that makes it run. I have no idea, but I don't really need to know that if I want to sell. When I sell my car, no one is going to ask me about fuel injection or anything. No one's going to ask me about how the transmission works. No one's going to ask me that. I don't need to know that. I did need to know an awful lot of history, though, to create history courses. I'll put it that way.
All right.
I want to actually go back in time, because it's been a while. Certainly, Steve, I think it's been a couple of years since I've talked to you on the program. So not everybody knows your story. I want to start with your story because it's a really interesting one. Everybody, just about everybody, at least every American listening to this, will be familiar with the company for which you were once a VP. So how did you go from that to where you are now? And what's the benefit of moving from that to where you are now?
Yeah, I sure, let me tell you, I sure wish I still owned stock in the company that I was a VP. So they did pretty well during this whole thing. I was a vice president for LabCorp. So, a U.S. diagnostic testing company about I don't even know what they are right now, probably $6 billion a year, Fortune 500 company. And my background was, I did about 18 years or so in corporate America, and I was in IT. I was a chief information officer for a public company for about 5 or 6 years, and then we were bought out by LabCorp. We were a diagnostic company as well. And so then I stayed on for 5 more years and then ended my career. And I sort of had this, crossroads before me, and that was, do I do it again? Do I try and go down that corporate avenue again? Or do I try and become, some sort of an entrepreneur, which is what I, sort of always wanted to do. And it wasn't just for the sake of wanting to do that. I had some pretty specific whys in mind. I really wanted, basically freedom. I wanted geographic freedom, time freedom, financial freedom. When you're a VP for a Fortune 500 company, they pay pretty well. So I would say I had financial freedom, but I sure as hell didn't have the time to spend it. And I didn't have the geographic freedom. You go where you're told to go and that's it, pretty much. Now, maybe things are a little different, but that's the way it was back then. So I desperately wanted that freedom. So I sort of just made a deal with myself. I said, look, I'm super interested in this online evolving world. And don't forget, this is some, 15 years or more ago. So it was a little bit of a different landscape. And it was very new back then to be able to, build e-commerce sites or do affiliate marketing or anything like that. So I said, look, I'm going to give myself some time. I'm really interested in this. I've been following it along even when I was in corporate. And I took, a few months together and did a lot of research and actually wrote my own software to track direct response advertising spend and conversions and such, which is a great way to learn things. And I just went from there. And I've been a serial entrepreneur for this whole time. My joke is I never had to go back and get a real job. So. And the thing that drives me is really that whole freedom thing. I have lived, anywhere I wanted, and I've done some really, really interesting things and experiences and, just that freedom to do that, which I would never have had if I was staying in corporate, even as a VP for a Fortune 500 company and being paid well.
I seem to remember you saying when we had lunch, something like you were probably going to start another 1 or 2 companies. And as we walked away from that lunch, I said to Jenna, I guess that's where Steve and I are different. If I had reached Steve's level of success, I wouldn't have any interest whatsoever in starting any new companies.
It's the curse of the entrepreneur. Aiden's the same way. You never meet an idea you don't love. And you're just so, optimistic most of the time that you think you can make anything work, And we've been lucky, most things that we've played around with have worked in some way or another. And not everything, but, most things. So yeah, we're always kind of, we got a little bit of probably some ADHD going on there and, that sort of thing. And it's just kind of the way we're wired, I think.
All right. Well, fair enough. Good for you. All right. So Aiden, your Argentina story, how a New Zealander and an Argentiner got together.
It's a little bit different to Steve's because mine's a love story, Tom. So okay. I met my wife back in 2003 doing a ski season in Lake Tahoe. It was our summer break and we went up to Lake Tahoe in the winter and met my girlfriend. She happened to be from Buenos Aires, Argentina. This is back in 2003. And then in 2005, I actually went to Buenos Aires, but of course I had no Spanish. I'd never studied Spanish or anything like that. I didn't have a visa to be able to work in Argentina. So it was kind of like, what am I going to do to make money? And oh, by the way, I had a student loan hanging over my head. And I started just researching online. And I sort of felt like, I don't need a lot of money coming in, but if I could get a flow of, cash coming in each day from some online business, then that would be a life changer for me. And that was what I sort of set about doing. I remember going to these ice cream parlors in Buenos Aires, a hot day, and I had this old HP laptop. The thing must have weighed, God, it must weigh like 10 pounds or more. And it used to get really, really hot sitting on my lap. So I'd be sitting there in this ice cream parlor having a coffee and maybe an ice cream or something, and my knees would be cooking because I had this heavy, hot old laptop on me. But this is back in, 2005, 2006. So thankfully, there's a lot better laptops nowadays. But the point is, I had this dream of this laptop lifestyle, and it's been an amazing ride. And, I think fair to say that I never could have imagined the possibility that's out there and what that would look like in 2021, all those years ago. I'm just so thankful that I got started and little by little had wins and kept building.
Well, to some degree, if you're working online, you have to be kind of alert to changes. Like, for example, a lot of people don't like Google, but the fact is most people looking for you online are going to go to Google, whether you like it or not. They're going to go there. And if Google's algorithm changes, that can affect how readily or otherwise they find your website. Or, for example, in the early days of the internet, I'm sure you could just slap a quick affiliate site up. I know somebody who did this. She was a mom, and so she had a site where she compared different baby strollers. And people would find that site immediately just by searching for baby strollers. They would find these comparisons, they would click buy one, and she would earn a commission. It doesn't work quite that easily anymore. And not to mention, sometimes if the site is too thin, let's say, if all it is a series of links to buy products, well, Google doesn't like that kind of site, so it won't rank. So you have to stay on top of things like that. And I hate having to stay on top of things. I like my boring business model that no matter what Google does, it doesn't really affect me. So this is a roundabout way of asking, all right, you have a lot of people, it's the beginning of 2021, they see what can happen to them under circumstances no one could have predicted. They're interested in saying, well, maybe I don't want to quit my day job, but, there's no, I'm not, the people who are succeeding with online businesses do not belong to a different species from me, so I would like to get a look at it. What is it that you're doing these days, or what do you recommend that's not going to be rendered, let's say, irrelevant or non-operational anymore because of one change that Google makes or that kind of thing?
I think it's important to say that while I agree it used to be the wild, wild west, certainly when I started, and so what you described is accurate. However, even now, two decades later, with all the maturity that and complexity that's entered into the game, it's still is a far cry when you sort of juxtapose trying to start an online business with a brick and mortar business. If you wanted to start a small retail shop in your local city, the complexities of leases and building out that space and trying to figure out if from a foot traffic perspective, that's the right place to go. To having employees that are there and having to be open all the time and having to have insurance and all. I mean, it's just, it'll blow your mind. And basically I would just be pulling my hair out, if I had to worry about all those little details. Whereas even now, two decades later, after the Wild West, it's still ready, fire, aim when you're building online businesses, because, there's really not a lot of risk. When you build out an e-commerce site and you put together a model like we suggest for most people to do, which is essentially a drop shipping model where you don't buy inventory up front or anything like that. You basically, and you combine that with traffic sources that potentially are, some of them are free. It's just like no risk, So you really can get in there, throw things around, see what sticks, and you're not penalized for that sort of behavior. So it's still kind of the wild, wild west, even though, again, it's a far cry from what it was, two decades ago. And I think the other thing is that that's changed is that, everybody wants to be Amazon, meaning that every single big player in tech wants to be a marketplace. You've got Amazon, Google, Target, Walmart, Facebook. Absolutely everyone wants a piece of this marketplace kind of world. And so you benefit from this, you know, competition, in that you could have diversity in your traffic sources and your revenue channels and things like that. So, you know, what we're building out are sort of platform agnostic e-commerce sites that easily and quickly, you know, integrate with this wide variety of these different channels. And that just protects you. And again, makes it all the more easy. So anyway, that's a long-winded answer to that question, but that's kind of where what I'm thinking.
Just to add one other thing in there as well. I think one of the deliberate changes we've made, and this has really helped us over the past year as well, is to focus on USA-based products that are already in the USA. People don't like waiting a month or 2 months to get a product shipped to them, you know, from China or wherever it is. So by focusing on products that are already in the USA and being able to have these different connections with lots of different manufacturers and suppliers in the United States, it means that we really can deliver the same kind of a service that Amazon delivers, where someone buys a product on a Monday, they've got it on a Tuesday. And I think that's really helping us become more customer-centric and just agile in growing the business.
Is there a way that this kind of thing can be made basic? And I know this one's a softball over the plate, but this is the kind of question I would have as a listener. What you're describing, is this hard to do? I mean, I get that the brick and mortar business, I would never even consider that. I would be worried constantly and getting foot traffic in there. And then I've got all these employees and their whole families depending on me to make the right decisions so the business doesn't go under. And I have all these utility bills to pay and the rent and the mortgage or something. I could not tell. I'm getting exhausted thinking about it right now as I'm describing it to you. So I like the no overhead. I like all this stuff. I like not laying out $1 million and all that. But what exactly is it that you do in the kind of business that, I know you guys have all kinds of different businesses, but the kinds that you're teaching these days, what does it consist of? What do I actually do?
Yeah, so, I mean, what we've tried to do is eliminate every single bottleneck and area where people get hung up, you know, and there's a variety of different places that people sometimes get hung up. You know, it can be developing the website itself, getting their shopping cart all set up, finding products, finding suppliers, dealing with the fulfillment, you know, that sort of thing. But these are all the things that, you know, need to get done. So essentially your job is you're going to create an e-commerce store. You're going to pick products to sell to folks. You're going to pick different places to find these folks who will buy the products. So it could be on Google, it could be on Facebook, it could be on Target, Walmart. You could, in fact, as we're doing with some of our businesses, be supplying brick and mortar stores. So you're not owning the brick and mortar store, you're just, you know, selling them goods for them to sell. So there's a million different ways you can do that, but that's your job in this scenario. And then once you sell the product, and your employee in this scenario is really the website. It acts as your employee, acts as your store. And once you sell the product, you're responsible for fulfilling it. And meaning just, you know, contact the supplier, say, hey, I've got, you know, Joe just bought this. Can you send him one? And it's pretty much as easy as that. And then, you know, any kind of customer service questions like where's my stuff or anything like that would need to be answered. So that's kind of in 25 words or less, the operations of the store. And, you know, as I started to say in the beginning of that, what we try to do is identify all those pain points, you know, creating the store, getting the traffic, figuring out the supply chain, dealing with a reseller certificate, dealing with fulfillment, dealing with how you select these products, dealing with how you do customer service. And what we try to do is have a solution that is, you know, off-the-shelf solution, business in a box solution, already done for you kind of solution, so that you can just take it and run with it. So a good example of that would be if you create a store on your own, you're going to have to go and say, all right, well, I better get a domain. And then I have to figure out which shopping cart to use. Let's say I use Shopify. Then I have to figure out what's it going to look like. So I got to pick from the thousands of different themes that Shopify has. And then I got to figure out how it's going to work. So there's like 50 apps I should probably be looking at to figure out how I add those to my Shopify site to make it all work properly. And then good grief, now I'm paying Shopify like $500 a month or, you know, that's crazy. So what we do is we've got, you know, our own Launchpad system that basically says, look, pick a domain, push a button, here's your store. In fact, we even give you products, but we'll talk about that later. But And don't worry, you know, everything's done. The template's done. All the apps are done. Everything's done. And you don't have to pay for it. So that's, you know, kind of what we're working on now is you know, that's these are all the things that somebody has to do. And what we're trying to do is make sure that every single roadblock that we've seen people stumble with before, we're just trying to get rid of.
And so the idea is that you could, in principle, through an incredible amount of trial and error, maybe figure out this entire system on your own.
Sure.
But probably you have a better chance of being struck by lightning three consecutive times on the way out of your house. You know, something that I read the other day, I don't know if you guys know this, I hope I'm not insulting you by wondering if you know who Jay Abraham is, but that guy who has transformed so many businesses over the years, I'm actually about to join one of his programs, and it's not cheap at all. But one line that he said, for some reason, you know, it's like when you have a big long sales page with 18,000 bullet points, it's that there's one bullet point that your customer just has to sign up for the program to find out what that one bullet point is all about. Well, he just put it so simply. He said, you know, chances are if you wanted to reach your goal, let's say you're overweight by 50 pounds. If you were really, really, if you really could fix that problem, you probably would have already. If you could have fixed it completely on your own. Yeah. Or if you want to be financially independent or whatever. If you could have done that on your own, you probably would have already. I mean, really, what would be the reason for you not to?
Yeah.
But he said, the thing is, life is like a jigsaw puzzle and there are pieces scattered all over the place. And he says, I, Jay Abraham, I have a pretty big piece of that puzzle that you need. And I thought to myself, that's the perfect image.
Yeah.
Is that I haven't taught myself everything I've learned up to this point. I learned from John Lee Dumas at Podcasters Paradise. I learned from a whole bunch of people, Ben Settle doing my emails. And when he put it that way, that we all have these puzzle pieces that we're missing, and we just have to go out and find them and not assume that they're hidden in our brain somewhere. They're out there. You got to go find them. He's got one of the pieces. Basically, for several years, I've suggested to people that you guys have a pretty big piece. I mean, yeah, you could try and figure this all out on your own. It'll take you 20 years, and you won't stick with it, and you're going to hate yourself.
Yeah, I mean, we agree. I mean, that's the whole reason for our existence for this is basically, you know, to just try and shortcut that and basically get rid of, you know, become the path of least resistance to getting the goal that you want to achieve.
Yeah, so I've had quite a number of folks who have said, I just the other day, I won't say his name, but listening, he'll know who he is, and he'll mention this in our private group, I'm sure, that I had somebody who has been a supporter of mine for years, and I knew that he had been part of your program just last year. So I asked him, well, so tell me how it went. What do you think of their training? And he said, this has to be by far the most thorough, comprehensive training I've ever seen. And they're so conscientious. I'm always getting emails about how we've updated this, we've improved that, we've added this thing to. It's like they won't leave me alone with all the ways they're improving the thing. And I thought, if I trust this guy because he's been with me so long, and you know, you guys have done well by my folks over the years. So I thought, well, doggone it, I'm going to stick with old Aiden and Steve. So let's talk about that. We have our annual presentation with you guys coming up in a couple of weeks, January 26th, where you guys will walk through the exact, I mean, we've been kind of giving you a bird's eye overview, but you guys are going to walk through the exact steps of what this involves, how you build a little store, how you populate it with products, where do you find these things? How do you know which ones were? All these sorts of questions that naturally occur to people, you'll answer and you'll take questions live also from the audience. So I've got to sign up for that at tomwoods.com/Steve. No offense, Aiden, but Steve has a easier to remember, good old American boy kind of name. So
what's there?
Yeah.
Okay. So no one's going to misspell it. tomwoods.com/Steve to go sign up and just be there. I'll be there and we'll all go through this material together. You can decide, is this going to be the way you're going to fulfill that promise you made to yourself at the beginning of 2021 that you are going to insure yourself against any future 2020s that may be there. And also not just that, even if we hadn't had 2020,
yeah.
You know, doggone it. It's not bad to, again, this particular, he'll just say his name is James. So just so I don't have to keep saying he's some mystery guy. This guy's name is James. He feels like it equipped him, the knowledge he got, to do a whole variety of other things if he wants to.
Right.
So it's not, you're not going to say, boy, I sure wasted my time here. No. This is the stuff you need to know and the easiest way to do it, frankly.
I'm really happy that James said that because we take that pretty seriously. We, you know, our motto is we just over deliver because we only do this once a year. And so we sort of as James pointed out, we keep bothering the people that come into our course for the whole year because we don't have any other audience to go to, you know. So we sort of give them all an MBA in just basically being an online entrepreneur, which, you know, includes a lot of e-commerce, but it includes a lot of other things as well. We're very careful to keep focus because we want people to get results, but we do keep bothering them for the whole year.
I'll tell you what, Tom, there are a lot of Jameses out there This is, you know, in my experience anyway, there's never been an opportunity that has allowed so many, and I'm talking about e-commerce in general, allowed so many people just starting out to actually build a business that makes them money. And to begin with, it could be, you know, $1,000 a week profit. And then once you're at that, even once you're at just a couple of $100 a week profit, you know how to do it. And you can scale at that point. And in all the years that Steve and I have been doing this, we have never, ever seen such levels of success. And keep in mind that, you know, 2020 was 2020. You know, it wasn't, in many regards, it wasn't, you know, the perfect storm for building an online business. Yet we saw people thriving with it. It seems like, you know, all the stars aligned, especially for e-commerce. And I think 2021 is going to, you know, blow that out of the water. And it's another great opportunity for people to start a new chapter, do something new, and jump on this huge trend, which is only growing.
Well, excellent. I appreciate your time and catching up. And, you know, again, I wish it could have been in person, but, you know, I had to go places where there were things to do. So we just got back from the island of St. John in U.S. Virgin Islands. Population under 5,000.
Nice.
So, yeah, so you can do plenty of social distancing on St. John when the whole island doesn't even have 5,000 people.
Yeah.
So it seemed, especially in January, to be a better vacation destination than Chicago, Steve. But
definitely.
Let's hope 2021 holds out something.
You don't want to do 2 weeks in lockdown in New Zealand, Tom. Otherwise, you could come out
here. Yeah, I know. I know. Because, I mean, it seems like the flight takes 2 weeks to get there in the first place. So I got to wait till the world gets back to normal till I go explore New Zealand. But anyway, I hope everybody was gonna join us. Go sign up for this. So that you can attend at tomwoods.com/Steve. And I'll see you guys then. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, everybody. Tomorrow, boy, oh boy, have we got a good one. Because my guest is somebody I had a very public falling out with after writing a book together in the early 2000s. And I don't think we've had a spoken conversation in at least a dozen years. And that is going to happen tomorrow. Chris Ferrara. Really smart guy, had some very important legal victories against the COVID regime. We're going to be talking about those. Now, even if the content of this particular episode ain't no good, and that's impossible, the mere fact that this is happening makes this something to cheer, I think. So you're definitely not going to want to miss tomorrow's episode. So check that out. Make sure you subscribe to the show so you get all these episodes delivered to you automatically. Sign up for our event, tomwoods.com/Steve, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.